From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Megan Mack. Our connection this hour will be made on September 13th, primary day, when voters will cast their ballots for two seats for the Rochester City School Board. In January, mental health expert Melanie Funches and health worker Beatrice LeBron were appointed to the board following the departure of Malik Evans and Mary Adams. Evans is now a member of the Rochester City Council, and Adams resigned. Now, Funches and LeBron are running to fill the remainder of Evans and Adams' terms, and they have some competition. Reverend Judith Davis is also vying for a spot on the school board. You'll see all three names on the ballot during the September 13th primary. This hour, we'll talk to all three candidates about their platforms and their priorities for the district, from standardized testing to issues related to special education, teacher evaluations, and the appointment of a distinguished educator for the district. We have a lot to discuss, and listeners, we want to hear from you as well. This is your opportunity to ask the candidates your questions before you head to the polls. So to join our conversation today, you can call 844-295-TALK. That's 844-295-8255. Or if you're in Rochester, 263-WXXI, 263-9994. You can email the program at connections@wxxi.org. And you can find me on Twitter at mmacmedia. I'm seeing the phone already starting to ring. We'll get to your calls in just a few moments. But first, I would like to welcome my guest joining me in studio, Reverend Judith Davis. Nice to see you again.
Thank you.
Also in studio, Commissioner Melanie Funches, welcome to you.
Thank you.
And Commissioner Beatrice LeBron, welcome to you as well.
Thank you for having us.
Now, the winners of the primary will head to the general election in November to fill the remainder of those two terms, and then they'll need to run again in November 2019 for four-year terms of their own. So now that we've gotten those logistics out of the way, I'd like to start just by going around the panel and having each of the candidates tell us why they've decided to run. Tell us a little bit about your background. I know you've all been on the show multiple times before, but if listeners are tuning in for the first time, it'd be helpful to know your background. So we'll start with you, Reverend Davis.
Oh, hi. Well, good afternoon to everyone. And thank you again, Megan, for this opportunity. Some of my background here in Rochester is I came to Rochester to attend the seminary and graduated. And I liked Rochester, so I stayed here. And in my time here, I've come alongside victims of domestic violence, come alongside families who had murdered victims and their families. I've come alongside various persons impacted by various issues. And each time what I come to see is that there's always a power structure that's in place that keeps the status quo. And so my platform for the school board is community organizing for school reform. Because even researchers today say that any school reform that is proposed, it is either entirely abandoned after it's been put together, or it's implemented in such a diluted way that it keeps the status quo in place. And so community organizing is important because persons are coming from a perspective where we don't hide our heads in the sand. We acknowledge that there's power dynamics at work in the district that need to be addressed, need to be exposed, challenged, and disrupted in order to have improvements in our educational system. So that's why I've chosen community organizing.
Thank you. Melanie Funches.
Yes, again, I want to thank you for this opportunity to have us here. And the reason I chose to take this on was because I'm a child of this community. I'm not from here. I'm originally from the Bronx, but I came up here and was adopted by this community. So a part of this is me paying back a debt. You know, people sewed into me, a village sewed into me and made me the woman I am today. So it's up to me to give that back into my community. And working in mental health and having kids, being a parent of the district, working in mental health, having kids go through special ed, I've seen it should not be this hard. As hard as it was for me with all the privileges that I have educational privilege. I have, you know, the privilege of having myself and my husband parenting together. We have all these different things, and it shouldn't be this hard to educate children. You know, I have my last child's going through 12th grade, and I'm like, this should not be this hard. So part of what my thing is looking at special ed and why special ed is not a place. It's a set of specialized services that all kids get to be successful and to flourish in the educational environment. We've got to figure out why we don't treat it as such. And I also want to get our community to re-own you know, to remember, come back into membership with ourselves and re-own our district. Because what I hear around is people talk about the district, but it's our district. In Rochester, everyone either knows someone who works there, went there, had a kid or some child in their life who went there. It is ours, and we need to own it, because it's not going to be just the people who work at 131 West Broad Street or any of our 60 buildings who do this. It's going to be every mom, dad, neighbor, all of us putting our shoulders to the wheel to get this job done, because every child is our own. And so that's why I'm seeking to do this.
Thank you. Beatrice LeBron.
For me, my journey started in Rochester about 20 years ago. So I'm not originally from here. I'm originally from the Bronx, transplanted here as a single mom. And I've been in this district and this parent in this district for over 15 years. But it wasn't even my experience as a parent. Even though I had a lot of frustrations as a parent, you know, my kids went to school six. School six was closed. We were inadvertently thrown into another school with very little choice, with no implications on what that actually meant for me at that time when I was commuting by foot to walk my kids to school. It wasn't for me until I worked in the district as a long-term sub in special education and bilingual education that I really felt that these are the issues that are happening in our building, in our schools, that people don't get to see in the community normally, that do have an impact. So it's even beyond the idea of central office. It's actually what's happening in our schools and if our schools are getting the proper supports that they need and they're not. So even joining the board, it let me down this rabbit hole of the finances. Where does the money go? If I know for a fact when I worked in school buildings, we didn't have enough resources. Teachers didn't have enough books. They didn't have enough supplies. Our students weren't getting the support that they needed. And it was that experience that really prompted me to, one, leave the district so that I could run for a board seat. And I think, and I don't know if this is accurate or not, but I'll make this statement. And if it's not, someone can correct me, and I'm okay with that. I'm like the only person that will be running for the same seat 3 years in a row, even though it's a 4-year term. So I ran last year. I'm running again this year. And God willing, I'll be running again next year. But, you know, for me, running is not an easy thing to do, especially when you have small children. I still have a child going into second grade. I have two girls that have graduated from this district and are in college now. But it's not easy, and it is a major sacrifice, but it's absolutely worth it. And for me, I also represent the only Latina on the school board. And we'll talk about ELL a little bit later, but it's a population that also needs just as much of attention as our special education population. And if you're special ed and EOL, then your chances of even completing or ever finishing the district are even lower than both. So these are issues that we have to address, and we have to address them now. We can't wait.
So whether it involves the work that you're currently doing, any of the priorities that you just mentioned, or looking ahead in future years in Rochester, what is the first action item you would take if you were elected to this position? We'll start with you, Beatrice, this time.
For me, I've already taken the first step. It's diving into the budget and the finances. The budget process is a very confusing process for parents. I think we're one of the few districts where our people, the community, doesn't vote on the budget, even though they do in the suburbs, right next to us, 10 minutes away in Greece, their budget is voted on by the community. Where here, the board members vote for the school board budget. But there is major issues with the school board budget, and I've highlighted those already. When we're spending $15 million on consultants, but we can't get books in our schools, that's a problem for me. And people should know that this is what's happening so that they can be just as outraged and put pressure back onto the community, onto the district, to make better financial choices. I gave an analysis. That analysis for me is very factually based, even though people, you cannot take the perception of facts and twist it into an opinion. The facts are the facts. We have a stream of revenue that has declined over the years for many factors, many reasons, and our expenditures that continue to rise, and we're not going to be able to keep up with the demands that we need to fill. And in addition to that, it happened in Chicago, it happened in Detroit. I talked about this already, but it's not a unique thing to this district, but it's things that have happened in other districts that I feel like we can take their early warning signs and refocus. And so, yeah, our funding should be funding our schools and our students and whatever supports that they need. And anything additional, we really need to take a critical look at.
Okay, thank you. Melanie, first action item you would take?
I too, have already taken it. It was special ed. The day I was appointed, we started looking at special ed, and not just the what, but the how. We were not only looking at, you know, what's wrong, taking it apart, piecing it apart, because it's huge. About 20% of our children in the district receive some kind of specialized services. And I mean, that's a fifth of our population. That's a lot of kids. And so, but not only is it the what we're looking at, it's the way we're looking at it. We brought together graduates of the RCSD who had IEPs. We had parents, parent advocates, and content area experts all together working in committees to look at this and piece it apart. And we've broken it apart, and we've gone back to parents and making sure that everybody's at the table as we talk about what the problems are, but also what the solutions are.
Thank you. Reverend Davis.
It's interesting, this conversation that we're having. We could be sitting at the table with Charles Hamilton Houston, who was the attorney working with NAACP. We could be in between the 1930s and 50s and having this conversation. When I hear there's not enough books, there's not enough text, there's decrepit buildings, those are the exact examples that the team, the NAACP, was working on to show that the Plessy v. Ferguson decision of separate but equal, having equal facilities, was not being met, that decision. And so I share that to say that it's the policies and practices historically that have taken place. We see it today. They're still having the same impact. We still have overcrowded schools, decrepit buildings, no books, et cetera. So again, my first step would be two, because you have to do two. You have to have action and policy. So I would continue to work with developing and implementing a racial equity action plan. Right now, the superintendent, I and a coalition have been meeting with the superintendent, the deputy superintendent, to identify exactly these issues, to identify the policies exactly that are creating them, and to put a plan in place in order to abate and to eradicate this. So as to work, to continue to work on the Racial Equity Advocacy Leadership Committee that the superintendent has, and to go with that to call for the timely completion of IEPs, because I completely agree with Commissioner Funchess here. And so again, it's just interesting that I don't think we take the time to understand historically how those are revert those decisions, practices, policies. They're embedded, they're here right now operating. And I just found that interesting when you were sharing that, because I feel like I'm back with Marshall and Houston.
Do you think the board is doing a good job right now? Do you think it's been effective? And, you know, even if you do, what are some of the areas that you see for improvement? This time we'll start with Commissioner Funchess.
I don't think that we as a board are working to our maximum capacity. There are things that there. I think there's probably some things that we're doing well. There's some things that we need help on, but we're not, because if we were working to our maximum capacity, our schools would be doing well. Period. End of statement. Full stop. Some areas where we can have some improvement is how we all work with each other, and I think that the board is a microcosm of our district as a whole. I think we all get caught up in things that have to do with adults and not with kids. You know, and it's not just it's us as a board, it's the staff at the buildings, it's all of us. We talk about adult stuff. And if the first question we always ask ourselves is, how does this impact kids? Not if this impacts kids, so everything should impact kids, but how does this impact kids? What is the depth of degree? Then I think that we could come and coalesce better and maximize our power.
Okay, thank you. Beatrice.
No, I don't think that the board right now is working. I would say the same thing Commissioner Funchess just said, but some of the areas that we need to improve on is that people do tend to operate in their own way right now. And there's still a storming and norming process. We're in that storming, and that storming is dragging out. And I'm just being honest. And I want to be honest with you guys. I want to be honest with the listeners listening in right now. I think right now that the biggest issue, again, that I have right now is the finances. Like, if we end up in a position, we're kind of halfway there, right? We're getting a distinguished educator. This is a new territory for the board as a whole. You know, there's four older board members, three brand new board members. So it's a different perspective from depending on which side of the group you ask. So I definitely think we have some adult challenges, some professional development challenges that we need to overcome. But the reality is that our schools are failing, and our graduation rates, we're probably not going to see any increases, despite lots of talk that we were going to see increases. And if the board is not honest with itself about the state of the district, then the board cannot make changes. And I wholeheartedly believe if you're not honest with yourself, if you're not transparent with yourself, if you don't have accountability to say, I'm responsible for this, we can't make any changes. And we can't make, and we won't have any actual real solutions if we're not honest at the very least with ourselves about the state of the district. And it's not in a good state. So I walk around as a commissioner. I feel good about the work that the individuals that I know that do good work. There are many individuals in the schools, teachers, principals, admins, who really, social workers, who genuinely care about our students.
Absolutely.
And I want to shout them out and acknowledge them. But there's a lot of other people who are probably not doing what's best in our interest of our students. And we have to be able to decipher who those folks are, and have some accountability to them as well.
We'll talk about that distinguished educator in just a few moments, but before we move on to that, Reverend Davis, do you think the school board is doing a good job?
at this point in time, I have to agree that I don't think they're doing a good job. And I think the state says they're not doing a good job for bringing in a distinguished educator. It seems it would be, to me, an offense as the board, an offense as a superintendent, that someone is sending in someone else to, quote unquote, straighten out or fix the district. And how this wonder Superman can be able to do that, I'm not sure. But again, if the board doesn't understand or cooperates with the dynamics, the power dynamics that already exist in the district, change really isn't going to come and can't happen. Again, historically, school boards have been utilized as that gatekeeper that keeps resources, that keeps policies, et cetera, in place and generating and creating the inequitable outcomes that we see. And so, again, I think the first place, even the rooms that I'm in now, I think it goes beyond the board. It goes to the superintendent, the deputies, et cetera. Even at the table, the real table that I talked about now, we're talking about bringing anti-racist education to all personnel. All that means is we're against the ways in which racism manifests in the district. And Beatrice just shared how they manifest in the district. But persons in the room think that that term will offend white people. And it's nothing to do with calling white people racist. We're identifying what it is exactly that's operating in the district that we all need to be working against. So some proposals, you know, we're talking about, well, we'll call it this or call it that. Once you change what it is that you're addressing and call it something else, you're already off track, any goal that you put together for it. So if you call it implicit bias, that's not what's happening in the district. That's a part of racism, but that's not what's impacting the district. So until the board, the superintendent, the deputy superintendent, all the leadership is on board with calling what's happening and manifesting in the district what it really is, anti-racist professional development, we're against the ways racism manifests in the public district. So,
well, let's talk about that distinguished educator for a few moments. The State Education Department Commissioner appointed that distinguished educator for the district. It's led to a debate within the community. Commissioner Mary Ellen Elia selected Jamie Aquino for the role. He'll work with the superintendent and the district to assess fiscal operations and instructional operations and development strategies for improving the district. So we've talked a little bit about it previously on this program. Councilman Adam McFadden has been very outspoken about it, calling it a joke. School Board President Van White says he understands Adam McFadden's frustration, and he disagrees with some of the way that this is being handled, but he's also open-minded about bringing in an objective opinion to the district. I know we have Howard waiting on the line to ask a question about this. Before we take your call, Howard, I just want to go around the table and ask each of the candidates, do you support the move to hire a distinguished educator? We'll start with Commissioner Funches.
This, at this point, is not about whether I agree or disagree. This is something that has been done and it's happened. So what for me to be a good steward over the position that I have and be able to do the work that needs to be done, I have to put my shoulder to the wheel to do the work, you know, because if I sit here and because my not wanting it or wanting it is not going to stop Dr. Aquino from being here. It's not going to stop Dr. Aquino from doing what he needs to do. But what I can do is figure out how to make this work for kids. So that's what my position is.
Okay. Commissioner LeBron.
Similar sentiments to Commissioner Funches. We don't have a choice. The board doesn't have a choice in this. This is the state appointing it. And for myself, and I don't want to speak for the other two commissioners who are also new, this is the result of the past board dynamics and outcomes for this district for many years. So I don't personally feel like anything I did as a commissioner in the last 6 months led to the appointment of a distinguished educator. But many things that have happened over the couple of last years, especially with this district. You mentioned the REAL team meeting with the superintendent and the deputy, but how many deputies have flipped in those last year? So those deputies have changed on you on you guys having those meetings. Right. We just don't have stability in that leadership. So it's wonderful work that you guys are trying to bring in, but where's the stability in that if the people at the table on the leadership end for that represent the district constantly flip and change? You know, when I first heard about the distinguished educator, it was supposed to be someone else. And for that individual who had no experience in a large urban population, I was very confused. I do know that Dr. Aquino brings that piece of it that was missing from the first appointment. But I did do a lot of research on other places who have had distinguished educators, and Hempstead being one of them. And Hempstead is an interesting case if anybody's never heard of that district and why they got an appointment. I thoroughly encourage people to research them. They're a very unique case. But them, Buffalo, and us. And clearly there's some dynamics that are happening there that are happening here that led to the state saying, hey, we need to put someone in there. I'm hoping to remain hopeful and positive with this individual coming. Again, this is not a choice. If we had a choice in this, though, I would not choose to hire yet another high-paid employee in the district, especially in a district where we already have two superintendents, right, that we're paying lots of money for, and then hire a third person equivalent to a superintendent's salary. I just would not spend the money that way. That's just me. But I don't have a choice. So all I can do is hope that I'm as transparent as I can be, that I can point out areas for him to examine further, to report back to the state and see what happens from there.
Reverend Davis, your thoughts on the appointment of Dr. Aquino?
Well, first of all, I just wanted to say the stability in the room for the REAL comes from the community, because we're still at the table and we haven't changed. When it comes to the distinguished educator, no, I'm not for bringing a distinguished educator here. And one of the main reasons is when you look at the reports on the district, I've looked at the reports from special education, for example. They had one in 2009, 2013, 2017. They're all saying the same thing. They never actually are held accountable for what's in the reports. There's all these recommendations to implement. So I don't see that the district doesn't know what to do or how to do it, et cetera. It doesn't have a will to do it. That's the problem. So I don't know how this person's going to change the will of the district. I believe that political pressure, community organizing, that traditionally is what has changed the will. And so I can't buy into the philosophy that there's nothing the commissioners could do. Because if that's true, we'd still be in segregated schools. But actually, we are because of other things that have happened. But racial segregation, the parents that brought cases to the court to show that racial segregation in education is unconstitutional, if they took the attitude, there's nothing we could do, I wouldn't be here. I wouldn't have the education that I have right now. And so there's always something you can do when you recognize that you're not an island, you're not by yourself. And in this position, I'm elected by people. So when something comes up, I go to the people, and 100, 200, 500, whatever it takes to create that political will in the district to say no to this, that's what we do.
Thank you. Howard's been waiting on the phone with a follow-up question on this very issue. Go ahead, Howard.
Yes, I do have a follow-up question. I do want to echo, though, that we are at the real table, and we're glad that the deputies have flipped. Finally, they have someone who knows something about institutional and structural racism at the table, and that's Dr. Cecilia Golden. So we're glad. But as Reverend Davis mentioned, we provide the stability because we have as much, if not more, expertise than anyone else at the table. So that work is very important.
Howard, let me just jump in so our listeners know that this is Howard Eagle. He's a member of the MAMA group,
the Movement for Anti-Racist Ministry in Action.
Thank you.
Yes,
so, listeners, you're listening to Howard Eagle. Go ahead.
Yes, I'm a member of a coalition which involves the Take It Down Planning Committee, the Faith Community Alliance, and the Movement for Anti-Racist Ministry in Action, MAMA. So we're a coalition that's working along with trying to work with the district in terms of addressing some of the issues that Reverend Davis has been raising. But I do have a follow-up question about this so-called distinguished educator who Dan White, the president of the board, has referred to as a kind of Marvel Avengers hero type of guy. And so we don't know what it is he's supposed to do. But for the commissioners, this is my follow-up question, especially if you have budgetary concerns, serious budgetary concerns. This guy is getting ready to make at least $200,000. He might walk away with a cool half a million. In light of that, and especially in light of the fact that the racist, I'm going to call it as it is, the racist state commissioner of education didn't even have the integrity to have a conversation with the parents and with the taxpayers of this community before pulling this politically motivated stunt. Why was it that the commissioners didn't push back? We know Ms. Funches voted in favor of this. Ms. LeBron was absent from the meeting. And then my question to them is, why didn't they push back, at least say to the commissioner, we need to have a conversation before we do this? And then my question for Reverend Davis would be, had you been sitting there, would you have pushed back?
Okay, thanks, Howard. Let me put you back on the line. Go ahead, Commissioner Funches.
The answer to the question is, we did push back. And because if people remember, this is the second person that we got. The fact is, when the first gentleman, whose name I can't even remember now.
Kenneth Eastwood.
Yeah, thank you. Eastwood. When Dr. Eastwood was put forth, we saw that he wasn't it, and we pushed back hard against Commissioner Elia and said, no, this is not going to work for all of these different reasons. And what was said was, you know, they backed off. And what they've decided, that we are going to get a distinguished educator. This was a mandate that was beyond us, but it's not that we didn't push back. The fact of the matter is, we're going to get a distinguished educator. That is what it is. And yes, I voted because we're going to get it. And when we were faced with a choice, we had the gentleman who had no urban education experience, had other issues that I will not put forth here, or a gentleman with urban education experience with different communities and things like this, that when I'm faced with this, let us go, and I voted for it to move on. Because if we're going to have this, we could either drag it out and just be contentious, or we can try and do this and move on and try to see how we can make this work for kids. You know, but the fact is, we did push back, and we pushed back because we were supposed to have the distinguished educator months ago. And we did push back, and it was like, you're going to get one. And that's what this is.
That's not the answer to my question. My question is, why didn't you push back in terms of insisting that the commissioner have a discussion with parents and with taxpayers of this community? We collectively could have possibly stopped this. That's real leadership. That's the kind of resistance that we need right now, especially if you have budgetary concerns. Talk about how much money this guy's going to make, $150 and 70 cents, no more than that, an hour, and any additional expenses that's related to his job. We don't even know how much he's going to get, but if Eastwood was going to make $200,000 and doesn't have the experience and knowledge as you outlined, then this guy, who supposedly is a Superman as it relates to urban education, even though when we look at L.A., when we look at Denver, when we look at Hartford, we don't see any impact that he's had there, places where he's worked. This is absolutely ludicrous. But my question is, why didn't you push back in terms of a discussion with the community, with parents, with taxpayers? They wouldn't. Ilya, I refer to her as a racist. One reason why is because she'd never pull this kind of thing in a predominantly white, middle, or upper class.
Okay, Howard, let me jump in. Let me jump in and put you back on hold just so they have a chance to respond. We've got a lot of feedback on this issue. So, Commissioners Funchez and LeBron.
Yeah, just to echo what Commissioner Funchez has stated already, that the first person we did push back, nobody's in the room except commissioners and the superintendent when we're in executive session and we're talking about finances and people's salaries. And I can assure you that I argue probably the most about money. So this is not just, you know, for show. Mm-hmm. Melanie can tell you. Yes. I get very heated and debatable about finances for every position, not just this distinguished educator. When we're flipping, changing titles, it just doesn't make sense to me. And I will state this, that the first person, there was some pushback, so much so that Commissioner Elia and Chancellor Rosa came down. And they came to speak to everybody individually and have one-on-one meetings, because the first time he talks about them not speaking to taxpayers and community folks and parents. I'm a parent in this district, too, but commissioners weren't even talked to. We found out through a press release, and the same time the community found out the first time, we found out the first time the same way, which, you know, is upsetting when you think about it, that you work for, you know, in a position where Commissioner Elia is above us. She is above us as commissioners. We're the only, like, elected seat where there's another person appointed that has the authority to remove you from the board. Like, she has that authority. Now, I say all this to say that when we met one-on-one, I will share that I was the last person to meet, and I was the only person that talked about the cost of this distinguished educator. And they were very surprised that I had an issue with the cost, because they said nobody else had talked about the cost. And it was like, well, they should have. It's $200,000 to have to me, I look at it as we're going to have a third superintendent with even less power than the one that's here. It's just, it doesn't make sense to me. I get it. But on the flip side, she's made her decision. It didn't go over well in Hempstead to fight the distinguished educator. It didn't go well in Buffalo either. I don't know if we'll have any miraculous outcomes. I don't remain hopeful for that part of it, for many reasons. And to me, it's not just the will of the district and that he's going to come in and change it. I don't think any of that has to happen. I think we have to have real, honest conversations about the state of the district, right, and stop PRing what we are doing with our schools. There's a lot of good PR that goes around, but that's not the reality that the district faces right now. We're in a really bad place right now, and there are some things that I cannot share because it's not going to be public yet, but I do think that this is probably going to be one of the worst years, and 2019 certainly, that the district has ever faced in its history.
Reverend Davis, I'll give you just a few moments to respond. Then we have to move on to some other issues because we have a lot of questions from our listeners for you on other topics. So go ahead, a few moments to respond to this issue in particular.
Well, I would do what I shared earlier. Again, you bring it to the community and let them know what's going on. One thing I do have to say as a part of the community and to the community is that parents, students, community members have tried, have come to the district over decades before I ever got here to Rochester, and have not been successful in changing things. And so I understand the community may not want to hope or to try again, but I'm encouraging the community that this is the time and this is the place here in Rochester. We're the first of many things. This is the time to take a stand. This is a time to show up. And on next Thursday at the board meeting, we're calling the community to come make your voice heard, share that we do not want our taxes, our monies paid this way. We do not need this distinguished educator, and let your voice be heard. We're calling for at least 100 people to come on August 23rd, next Thursday, at the board meeting and make your take your stand as a citizen of Rochester.
Okay, we're going to take our only break of the hour, a very short break. When we come back, more of your questions and comments for the three candidates in studio for Rochester City School Board. Tom, hang on the line for us. We're going to take our short break. If you'd like to join this conversation, 844-295-TALK. That's 844-295-8255. Or if you're in Rochester, 263-WXXI, 263-9994. Joining me in studio, Reverend Judith Davis, Commissioner Melanie Funches, and Commissioner Beatrice LeBron. More connections next. Coming up in our second hour, the Summer of Food series continues on Connections, and we'll be talking about places to explore, restaurants specifically, off the New York State Thruway. Maybe you've had a chance to travel from Albany to Buffalo at some point, or places in between, and maybe you got hungry and wanted a bite to eat and didn't want to go to one of those rest stops. So you explored a new place. That's what our guest did. We'll talk about it next hour. Welcome back to Connections. I'm Megan Mack, sitting in for Evan Dawson today. We are talking with the three candidates for Rochester City School Board. You can cast your vote on primary day, which is September 13th. Joining me in studio, Reverend Judith Davis, Commissioner Melanie Funches, and Commissioner Beatrice LeBron. We'll get right back to your feedback. Up next on the phone is Tom in Rochester. Go ahead, Tom.
Hi. I'm a parent. I have two kids in the school district, and I attend school board meetings, and it's sort of shocking to me how the board seems very scattered, a series of individuals that are mostly arguing. I see very little unity or agreement on the board. It's kind of like they have no idea how to work as a team. And how does that benefit the district? Everybody, people not committing to working together. Any of the candidates value working together on team building? Because I know that that's an important way of making a school board work together in unison with shared goals, and any sort of personal commitment to board improvement. And how can this board development happen very specifically? It always shocks me to see the board, how much they argue and seem like work against each other, and which is
okay.
So what are they interested in doing?
Okay, thanks, Tom. Let's start with Reverend Davis. If you were elected to the board, what do you value in terms of teamwork, and how would you foster a better, in Tom's word, a more collaborative approach on the board?
Definitely, there's nowhere you're not going to get anywhere without teamwork, and I think that truthfulness and reality is always the place to start. And for us to understand the perspectives that we're all bringing to the table, find the way that we complement one another and can work together on those issues. but ultimately, I have to say that if it turns out that the persons on the board is the vehicle that's keeping the district the way it is, that they're bending to the power dynamics in the district, then I have to I will always be sharing with the community what's going on, but then it's going to be the community that's going to have to step up and hold the board and everyone else accountable. But of course, I would work with my colleagues by starting with reality, starting with understanding what's important to them and seeing what our skills are, working together. And there's also plenty of professional development for boards that we can attend together.
Thank you. Commissioner LeBron, is someone who's in the room, what are your reactions to Tom's feedback?
I would agree with Tom. There are a couple of meetings. I myself have called things out and maybe it's rubbed some commissioners the wrong way, but it's not personal to them. We're calling things out that need to be called out. I feel like commissioners should not take that personal if it's not related to them personally. When I said we're still going through the storming and norming, but we're still in the storming process longer than most groups, we're still there. But what I can say is that the board recognizes that we do need to figure out some collective goals and some collective ideas to work towards. And we are doing our own board development right now. So we just had a board retreat. We have another board retreat. So we are committed to figuring out and the storming and norming to ensure that all of our voices are heard. Because I do think that we all come from very different backgrounds with very strong voices. And we all want to be heard at the end of the day. But we all recognize, and I can say this truly, that every single commissioner recognizes that we're not going to get far as a board if we're not working together. So we're working on it.
Commissioner Funchess.
I agree with Commissioner LeBron that part of what she said, that we are norming and storming, because I don't think people really understand this is one of the first times that three new commissioners have come on all at the same time. Right. So half the board has changed over in the last 6 months, 7 months. And so we're norming and storming, but we also recognize, like I said, we just had a board retreat, and we're working on our own development because we recognize what this is. The work I do in the community, I'm committed. I work in coalitions. That's what we do. That's how historically we've always gotten work done. And so I am committed to helping us to work together as a board better. Part of this is just the nature of the changeover, and also the not just the change in just different people, but different types of people. The three new commissioners who have come from very different perspectives than the historical commissioners. And also we and the three of us are as individuals are very different from one another. So I believe that some of this is part of us coming together and coalescing as a group, but we're also taking very deliberate and intentional steps around how can we work better as a unit? And we're doing that.
Thank you for that question, Tom. We're down to our last 10 or so minutes with the candidates, so we're going to try to work in as many of your questions and comments as possible, listeners. Up next is a question from Chris Albrecht. He's the New York State Teacher of the Year. He's a fourth grade teacher in Brockport. Here's his question for the candidates. He says, the decisions made by a school board have an effect on students, teachers, and the community. Being a school board member is a position of service. Prior to running for the school board, what have you done to serve the Rochester community? And this time we'll start with Commissioner Funchess.
I have been working in this community for well over 20 years on both in my professional role in the community as the director of community engagement at the Mental Health Association, but on countless community committees and coalitions. I worked on the community task force for school climate that helped draft the new code of conduct and the recommendations that went with it. I've worked with groups that worked around restorative practices in the district. We've done work around health and wellness. I'm on the African American Health Coalition. And this for the last over 20 years, I have worked tirelessly in different capacities to work with children, youth, and families to help us all be well and be well in our mental health, be well in our physical health, and to be educated and so our community can be liberated and grow.
Mm-hmm. Commissioner LeBron.
So for me, I've worked all over the place, too. So Alternatives for Battered Women, which is now Willow. I've worked at the YWCA, the YMCA. I have worked at the Community Place of Greater Rochester. I've done a ton of volunteer work throughout my 18 years in this community. Also, I'm a parent in this district, and my kids have volunteered with me. My kids have participated in many programs and organizations as well. I've served on the board for CASA, which is Children Awaiting Parents. It's a court-appointed special advocates, so children who are in foster care. So many, many things. And currently, probably can say I'm one of the few people on the board who is a direct service provider. So I still go out and do home visits and get recommendations from the ER doctors, from different practices and clinics for patients who may need additional services or some support. And I go out and do assessments, do linkages, do Medicare, Medicaid applications, long-term care. So everyone from zero to seniors, I still directly work in this community.
Thank you. Reverend Davis.
Well, while I was in seminary, I worked as a part of YouthQuest as the associate director, and I also helped to create curriculum to create ethical youth leadership here in Rochester. From there, I moved into providing support groups for victims of domestic violence at ABW, Willow, et cetera. From there, I went to Facing Race, Embracing Equity, and for 5 or 6 years, I was the co-facilitator of the race and the race and education work group, action and change work group. And recently, I'm a part of the Racial Equity Action, Racial Equity Advocacy Leadership, all these acronyms, team. I'm also one of the co-teachers providing Education for Action, which is a course for churches, for people of faith, and it's talking about racism and how it manifests in public education and how racism manifests in the Christian church. And so those are some of the things. I've also been a part of Project Urge. I've been on the board, and that's when churches in the suburbs come alongside churches in the in the city and work with those churches, letting those churches take the lead. And so we helped to put together, we worked with a soup kitchen at one of the churches, and we brought in persons that could help connect the persons who came to social services.
I think we're moving into a lightning round phase because we're running out of time and there are many questions here, so it may be unfair to ask you to try to be brief with some of your answers. But the next question comes from Amy on Twitter. She says, how would they address the underlying issues in the community that affect outcomes, poverty, hunger? The district can do such things to help the greater community. We'll start with Commissioner LeBron.
First and foremost, we don't really align our resources in this community the way that we should, and that includes the district. So when we talk about poverty and hunger, and I work in the health field, these are the same social detriments that impact the patients and their health outcomes. It's all interrelated and interlocked, but we don't interrelate it and interlock it. So first and foremost is looking at how we align all of our agencies and how everybody is supporting each other, because that's part of the issue is that historically the health system has been a silo to itself. Our public education has been a silo to itself, but there's many connections that can be had over with health institutions and public education. And I know that the state is looking at some of those things right now, but we don't need to wait for the state to give us the mandate to do those things. We should be looking at how do we collaborate and cross over support services for our nonprofits, our health agencies, and our public education.
Thank you. Commissioner Funches.
I agree with Commissioner LeBron that we don't align our resources well as a community all the time. We don't maximize the ability to bring things so that children are affected at home, at school, at play. And being that I come out of health, I think that understanding coming out of health, coming out of not-for-profit in the health field, that we're able, that I could help to work to help us see how we do it in community, because we do it in the community all the time. We just don't do it with the district and trying to do that. So it's about aligning our resources so that the community and the school and we're all working toward a collective impact.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. Reverend Davis.
I think if we look at history, that education, the institution of education, is the place to start and will impact the other areas. Again, if you deny a people education, you also deny them being able to participate in the job market because they don't have the skills and knowledge that they need. Then you touch where they can live, et cetera. It's just a cascading thing. So if you start with addressing racism in public education and others come alongside you and they're addressing racism in housing, healthcare, et cetera, if you do that, we'll be able to address things simultaneously.
The next question is from Deborah on Twitter. She says, how can we as a community support the district and its board and helping city students overcome the effects of institutional racism, trauma, and poverty? We all own a role in the situation and the solution. How can we help? We'll start with Reverend Davis.
Well, MAMA, the Movement for Anti-Racist Ministry in Action, has put together a course, and we provide it to the community, and we share how racism manifests in the public education system, how it manifests in the Christian church, and it's education for now to go and to engage in action. If you understand how policies were created to do what they did then, you'll also know how they do it now. And the community can help by understanding how it operates and then organizing, joining campaigns around particular issues. So one of the campaigns I'd love to see, we want timely completion of IEPs in the district. Well, that's a campaign. Either it's going to happen or it's not. So we rally around together. So what's making that not happen now? And how do we address that? So that's something the community could, so that's what I would talk about. First understanding the issues and then joining with those who understand the issues to engage in campaigns to change the issues.
Commissioner Funches.
Something I feel that people should do around, particularly white people, is to talk to your cousins, okay? Because the fact of the matter is these issues, we always look to people of color to say, you know, let's raise up these issues, but there's also work that white people can do, right? Talking to people that you know believe that people of color are second class, that they are not good. Just talk to them and try to work with them in doing your own work. Because I believe that the work of racism is a three-legged stool. There's work that white people do with other white people, work that black people do with black people of color do with other people of color, and work that we do together. And a lot of times we always want to say, well, what can we do for you? But what do you do for yourselves to set yourself up to be able to work with the rest of us to eradicate the situation?
Thank you. Commissioner LeBron.
So I just want to point out there's actually a number of groups in the community that do anti-racism education and workshops and call to action. But what I would say, we're talking about what can the community do to support it, is to start showing up to not just the board meetings, but show up to committee meetings, because that's really where a lot of the work, policies, audit, everything is happening at these committee meetings that are chaired by commissioners, that other commissioners serve on, that district leadership staff attend. And oftentimes you'll see there's nobody from the community at those meetings, even though they're open and they're public. But that's where a lot of the decisions are happening and the conversations happen mm-hmm. before the board business meeting. So I would really love for the community to start showing up to those, to see how commissioners are voting versus what they're saying. And you'll see that there's a vast difference in both of those.
Unfortunately, we have run out of time, and I had pages and pages of questions for all of you, including many listener questions. So if people listening do have more things that they would like to address with you, where can they find you, Commissioner LeBron?
I'm on Twitter, I'm on Facebook, I'm on Instagram, and my website is lebronforfamilies.com.
Thank you. Commissioner Funches.
I am on Facebook, I'm on Twitter, I'm also on Instagram, but hit me on Facebook, you can hit me on Twitter, and I'm melaniefunches.com.
Thank you. Reverend Davis.
I'm on Facebook, and it's Juice for School Board.
Thank you. All right, very good. We will post the links to all of those sites on our podcast page for this show. Thank you all for joining me today. We hope to continue these conversations before primary day. Stay with us, listeners. It's the summer of food next on Connections.